Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that is slowly waking to the fact that life is returning to some sense of normal, though it may never be quite the same as it was a little more than a year ago. The Motion Picture Academy had to deal with a few changes this year, having far fewer blockbuster movies to ignore and being forced to move its annual self-love fest, the Oscars show, back by a month and more. We'll discuss what was included and what was left out of the Academy nominations, which were made public on Monday. But first, we'll discuss a film whose star, Andra Day, both won a Golden Globe Award and is one of the Oscar nominees for Best Actress. Let's begin this week's show by talking about that film, which is titled The United States versus Billie Holiday. You likely know the name Billie Holiday. You also likely know the song that she's most closely tied to, Strange Fruit, her ode to the lynchings that occurred mostly in the Deep South during her lifetime. And you may know all about this because of a 1972 movie titled Lady Sings the Blues, which starred Diana Ross. Now, another actress has taken on the role of the talented, if tormented, singer. And that actress, Andra Day, has both won a Golden Globe and snared an Oscar nomination for her performance. Unfortunately, the movie in which Day stars doesn't begin to live up to the level of her all-too-obvious skills. Oh, director Lee Daniels, who made an acclaimed film in 2009 titled Precious, does manage to give us a number of moving moments while documenting the struggles that Holiday faced, either from her unfortunate choices in men, her addiction to hard drugs, or her battles with the federal officials. But the script that Daniels works from feels like something out of a dark version of the Hallmark Channel, and he makes sure that the devil forces that hound Holiday, save for one reluctant federal agent played by Trevante Rhodes, are more one-dimensionally dastardly than a cadre of mustachioed, snidely whiplashes. Like many other tales of a talented woman, in this case a Black woman, struggling to survive in an uncaring man's world, Holiday's real-life story was tragic enough to be almost operatic. Daniel's movie, though, tends to settle for melodramatic cliché.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, and I think, you know, we're going to be talking about the Oscar nominations here. I think it's telling that the only major award that The United States versus Billie Holiday is up for is for Andra Day's performance. And it is easily the best thing in the movie. In fact, I think it might be the only really good thing in this movie, which I'm trying to figure out why it doesn't click, why it doesn't connect, because we've seen these kind of biopics before that have trod the same territory, not just in terms of, you know, a great artist who struggled with addiction and never really, you know, kind of climbed out of it, but also, you know, just the way that certain artists in the past had to deal with systematic racism and sexism. We've seen it done before and we've seen it done powerfully. So why doesn't this work? And I think it's because Daniels and his writer, who's the playwright, Susan Laurie Parks, I don't think they ever really figured out what their attitude towards Billie Holiday as either an artist or as a person was. This just feels, it feels kind of unfocused in so many ways. And so much of the movie is just about Billie Holiday being addicted to drugs and being carted away by the police and just being in a state of misery. And I have no doubt that that's what her life was like. I mean, if you read just an online biography, you'll see that she had to overcome a lot of adversity to get played on the radio in the first place. And then the racist system kind of took over from there. But this feels more like overheated melodrama than it does genuine biography or legitimate commentary on these big themes that he's trying to tackle. And it's also told in a really strange way. A lot of this movie just kind of feels like one long montage where it's just kind of moving right from one event to the other. It will sometimes go into like a fantasy sort of realm and then back again, but it feels totally inconsistent. Like that wasn't, like they never settled on an approach here. So you do have this really strong Andra Day performance at the center of a movie that I don't think is worthy of her talent or of Billie Holiday's talent. And this was just really frustrating. Also, this is what, the 80th movie in the last year that we've seen that's about an FBI informant and their kind of weird relationship with the person that they're following. And in this case, the Trevante Rhodes character, he's another really good actor. That character is so unconvincing at every possible moment, and all of the character turns that happen in the last half feel arbitrary and strange. And so, yeah, this didn't work for me at all. And I think I agree with you that I'm gonna lay all of the blame at the feet of Lee Daniels, who I think is not nearly subtle. I mean, subtle is not in this man's vocabulary. Let's say that. Like, he is just not a subtle enough filmmaker to make this kind of material work, I think. So yeah, I would like to see another Billie Holiday movie that isn't Lady Sings the Blues and isn't this. I think there's still a great biopic to be made that also does justice to her talents. And I don't think this movie does it.
Well, you can see that this movie is going to go in a strange direction just by its title alone. So The United States versus Billie Holiday. Now, the problem there is the fact that unlike the trial of the Chicago Seven, it doesn't focus on, you know, purely the legal angle. It goes all over the place. And it's really, Nathan, you nailed it. It's really scattered. That's the problem with the film. It tries to address these really significant, important topics, but then it sort of glosses over them. And so, Dan, I'm going to push back a little bit on what you said in the intro. You said her choice of unfortunate men or something along those lines, or her unfortunate choices in men. But I think that the one thing that the movie does show is because of her childhood, because of her being subjected to sexual abuse at a young age, she didn't really have the agency to make choices about relationships and so forth. Because at one point, I thought the most telling moment in the movie is when she tries to explain to the FBI agent.
He's actually a federal.
Yeah, a federal.
Narcotics agent.
Right. That she can't have a typical relationship because of her past, that she feels comfortable only in these relationships that are abusive in some way. So I thought that that was a telling moment. But Nathan, as you point out, I mean, they try to do way too many things. And I'm a little bit less enthralled by Andra Day's performance than others seem to be, not in terms of her acting, but in terms of the choices that they made about her singing, because she's sort of betwixt and between. So we know in Lady Sings the Blues, like Diana Ross did her own thing, right? So here, I couldn't figure out if she was, and I'm not that familiar with her music, so I'll acknowledge that. I couldn't figure out if she was trying to emulate Billie Holiday, if she was trying to do her own thing. So it just really missed on multiple levels, I think, from my perspective.
And yet, we've all three criticized The United States versus Billie Holiday, and rightfully so, for any number of reasons. And yet there are moments within the movie in which you can see what it could have been. I mean, because it's certainly not a throwaway movie. It's certainly not something that deserves Razzies or, you know, Golden Raspberry Award. I mean, it's a well-made movie in so many ways. It's just, I think the main problem for me is, like, for example, there's one scene, I think it's the very first scene, in which Aislinger, the federal agent who's leading this thing, and he's
Garrett Hedlund.
Garrett Hedlund, right. And it's around a table with all these fat white guys. And I mean, they are so one-dimensional, they could have all been twisting their little mustaches.
And in fact, you know, there's a line of dialogue in that scene that I've seen called out in other reviews as being like, could you be more on the nose, where they're talking about the song Strange Fruit. And I almost wish that the movie had been more about that song and why it's powerful and what its history was, because it is. It's one of the great songs of that era. One of the agents says, you know, a lot of people are saying that this song is the starting pistol for the race riot that's going to be coming up. And it's just like, and again, it's what we talked about with, or it's mostly what I talked about when we discussed Judas and the Black Messiah, which I felt was a movie about historical figures that didn't feel like the people in it were historical figures. They felt like real people that hadn't become historical figures yet. This movie feels like it's about historical figures. Like the characters in it don't behave like real people. They behave like people in a biopic. And that's kind of part of the issue.
Strangely enough, it's a biopic about one of the most notable singers. And it's really not about music. That's what I found to be intriguing about the choices that Lee Daniels mm-hmm. made. Lee Daniels made.
Yeah, I remember seeing Lady Sings the Blues when it first came out. And I'm not going to make an argument that that's a great film. I just remember that all these years later, there is a single scene in that film involving Richard Pryor, Diana Ross, and a couple of guys who come to collect money from them that remains with me to this day. It's one of the most powerful film scenes in any film I've ever seen. And I will forget everything about Lee Daniels' movie, but I will never forget that scene. And so that just goes to show you what can be done with cinema when you've got a decent director like Sidney J. Fury. At any rate, that was our discussion of The United States versus Billie Holiday. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at the 2021 Oscar nominations. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the feature film, The United States versus Billie Holiday. Let's now take a look at the Oscar nominations, which were announced on Monday, and argue a bit about what the Motion Picture Academy got right and what it got wrong. And I know, Nathan, that you figure at least in one category, the Academy got it way, way wrong.
Are you referring to the best actor category?
I'm pretty sure that's what you've okay. been moaning about for months now.
Anticipating yeah. the exclusion.
I knew it would happen, but the Academy did not nominate Delroy Lindo for Spike Lee's film, The Five Bloods. And that's not to say that the best actor race this year doesn't have some amazing performances in it. You have Riz Ahmed in Sound of Metal. I'm also thrilled the Academy remembered and cared about Sound of Metal because that was one of my favorite films of the year. And it got nominated for a bunch of stuff, including Best Supporting Actor, which we can get to. But you also have Chadwick Boseman, Anthony Hopkins, Gary Oldman in Mank, which is my least favorite of the performances here, and Steven Yeun in Minari. And Steven Yeun is the first Asian American to be nominated in this category in like the 93 years of the Academy Awards. So I'm very sad that Delroy Lindo didn't get the recognition here because it's the kind of performance the Academy usually gravitates toward. I mean, it's operatic and it's bold and it's in your face acting, but there's a subtlety and a magnetism to it at the same time. So I'm not surprised because the movie came out way back in May or June and the Academy has a famously short attention span because The Five Bloods only got a nomination for Terrence Blanchard's musical score. So that was probably my biggest, yeah, of all the things to nominate. I mean, yeah. But so yeah, that was my biggest upset of the year, I would say.
Yeah. Well, you know, up until last night when Mary Pat and I finally broke our year-long movie going fest and went to the theater to see the movie The Father, up until last night, I would have thought, well, what's Anthony Hopkins doing on this list? I mean, come on, doesn't he had enough? We saw The Father. And I was blown away by his performance. So you can't say that he isn't deserving of at least a nomination, if not the award itself. But
yeah, I think perhaps here, I mean, you are correct, Nathan. I think Gary Oldman is the odd one out. But let's talk more about Mank. I appreciated that film, but I really was surprised, although I should not have been. I mean, Mank, didn't it receive the greatest number
ten nominations?
Yeah. And so is this Hollywood just looking navel-gazing about Hollywood? Because, you know, I would think that, I mean, like you said, The Five Bloods was completely overlooked, it seemed, except for, you know, a minor nomination. And so Mank receiving so many nominations was a surprise to me, honestly.
Well, and I don't even know how many it's actually going to win. but it certainly, I mean, it's all the technical categories that it racked up. Although Amanda Seyfried was nominated for Best Supporting Actress. I think she's the best thing in Mank, playing Marion Davies. So that was deserved. Why don't we go back to Best Picture, though? Should I just read off the nominees?
Yeah, yeah, go
so
ahead.
People
read,
know?
Read them. And all right. First of all, why only eight? But go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, okay. So we have, in alphabetical order, The Father, Judas and the Black Messiah, Mank, Minari, Nomadland, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal, and The Trial of the Chicago Seven. For me, the biggest surprise in that was probably Sound of Metal, because I just assumed the Academy would mostly overlook that film. So I'm glad that's in there. And I think of these eight, I think the one, it seems like a lock right now. That could change, but it certainly seems like Nomadland is the favorite to win here, which is sort of surprising in a way, because it is such a minor key artsy kind of movie, but it's been sweeping all the awards, and so it's the favorite here. I think
we've been fooled though in recent years. So
we have
favorites. So.
Well, and the surprise to me was Promising Young Woman. I mean, I did like that film, but honestly, I did not really expect to see it on the Best Picture list. You know, I think that Carey Mulligan's performance was notable, so, and the subject matter was important, but I was, for whatever reason, surprised that it made it onto this list. So is there anything else you would have put on this list, Dan? Because you said, hey, there was room for two more.
There had to be two more movies. You know, why not? Why stick with eight? I mean, that to me is like a slap in the face of people who could have qualified for 9 and 10. I mean, why not put the Five Bloods on there?
Or some movies that were nominated in other categories, like Ma Rainey's Black Bottom or One Night in Miami. Exactly. Like, just do it.
Or Borat.
Or Borat, why not? And I want to move down to the Best Supporting Actor category, because this is another kind of history-making group of nominees. It's the first time that three Black actors have been nominated in, I don't want to say a single category, because I could be wrong, but certainly that doesn't happen very often, because you have Daniel Kaluuya and Lakeith Stanfield from Judas and the Black Messiah, and Leslie Odom Jr. from One Night in Miami, alongside Sacha Baron Cohen in Trial of the Chicago Seven. And this was my real great surprise of the nominations. Paul Racy in Sound of Metal, who I think is just terrific in that movie, a mostly unknown actor getting an Oscar nomination. And of course, we have to talk about the fact that both Judas and the Black Messiah were nominated in the supporting category, which begs the question, who is the lead of that film? But it seems like it was some kind of odd voting thing where Lakeith Stanfield was submitted as a lead actor, Daniel Kaluuya was submitted as a supporting actor by the studio, and yet the Academy decided to nominate them both as supporting. So do the math on that. I think it's probably because Chadwick Boseman is a lock to win in the lead actor category, and no one wanted to, you know, go up against that because they'd likely lose.
Yeah, probably. You know, if I had to make a guess here, flip a coin, but I would say that award's going to go to Leslie Odom Jr.
I think it's possible that the double Judas and the Black Messiah nomination could split the votes.
I think
Daniel Kaluuya is the favorite here. I mean, he's been nominated once before, which none of the other actors in this category have been. And he's like, I mean, he's the scene stealer in that movie, right? He comes in and he gets the big fiery speeches. He's the person that you remember most. But it's totally possible that's a famously unpredictable category. I also think that supporting actress...
Except when there's an old veteran there, and then, you know, they always go for that. But
well, and I think that the supporting actress field is also kind of up in the air, because you have
Maria Bakalova. She's got to be the favorite in that field.
Oh, but what about Glenn Close?
No.
But she hasn't won an award. She should have won previously.
She should have won.
We've seen the Academy do this, but, you know, to Denzel Washington and others.
To win for this movie? Oh, man.
Which is Hillbilly Elegy, by the way, which is the only nomination that film got, despite it being, or I think it got a makeup nomination as well, but it's the only acting nomination it got. And Glenn Close is in a cruel twist of fate up against Olivia Colman in The Father. And let's not forget what happened the last time Glenn Close and Olivia Colman were nominated together. Colman took the Oscar that everyone thought would go to Glenn Close.
As you pointed out, Amanda Seyfried is very good.
She is. My favorite performance in the group is Yoo Jung in Minari as the grandmother, who I think is just tremendous in that film. And I would love to see her win. But this one is really up in the air. I have no idea how it's going to go. It's totally possible the goodwill towards Borat and just the sheer level of difficulty that that role required could win her that award. Again, a kind of a first-time actor in a major film getting an Oscar nomination, and for a comedy that hardly ever happens. So that's pretty incredible.
She was so good in that movie. I mean, Mary Pat was in stitches throughout half that film.
I thought her performance was amazing. And I've seen her on some of these talk shows, and she's just such a fresh, you know, personality, you know. And she, her friend sent in this like tape, you know, this iPhone recording, and, you know, and she was chosen out of thousands of people, of young women who auditioned and had even been called upon to audition and everything. And she just was perfect, perfectly cast.
I also think Chloe Zhao for director is probably going to win for Nomadland. Although Fincher for Mank, you know, you can't count him out.
Maybe, although the Academy loves not giving Oscars to David Fincher, so I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. Well, and I think the last category before we wrap up here that we haven't really talked about is Best Actress, although we did touch on that with Andrew Day in the first segment of the show. Do we think that Frances McDormand in Nomadland could get her third Oscar for this, or do we think they're going to give it to somebody like Carey Mulligan or Vanessa Kirby, these younger actors that have been kind of like quietly doing good work for the last decade?
That's a good question. I do not think that McDormand was going to win. I don't think that it was a powerful enough, you know, big performance. I could be wrong.
Don't count her out.
Yeah, never count Frances McDormand.
Right. Yeah, I think this is a tough one, and I really cannot choose, because I think that there were amazing performances. I thought Vanessa Kirby's performance was incredible. Amazing.
Yeah,
so be my favorite. I'm not saying that she would be the choice of the Academy.
So basically, we've given nobody any help on their Oscar pools this year. So
correct. Yes, exactly.
It's best of luck.
Well, we've proven to be wrong in the past, so maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And that was our view of the 2021 Oscar nominations. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Murray Pat Truthart, and I discussed the feature film The United States versus Billie Holiday. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that streaming and maybe back in the movie theater cinema has to offer. Until then, remember these words from the late Paul Newman, who won a Best Actor Oscar on his 7th try. It's like chasing a beautiful woman for 80 years. Finally, she relents and you say, "I'm terribly sorry. I'm tired." You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.